What are you doing research on when you're not examining a crater? What is your field of research and how would you describe your work?
I have done many, many different things. I've been doing dating rocks for over 30 years. So anything from dating rocks on the moon with Apollo missions to looking at seamounts, volcanic seamounts on the seafloor. And I've even dated mummy poo as well. So yes, I've done lots and lots of different things. I have been involved with dating impact structures for on and off for about 20 years.
Maybe we could look at another place and at another time. Can you describe what exactly happened 35 million years ago when a crater was caused at the North American coast near where Washington, D.C. is today?
This is what we dated and we studied. There was an asteroid or maybe a comet, and we're not completely sure, impacted with the shallow sea off the coast of the USA, about 200 kilometers away from Washington, D.C., which at that time would have been underwater. But yes, I mean, it caused a huge amount of destruction. It would have destroyed almost the whole of the east coast of the USA, forming earthquakes and a fireball and molten rock falling from the sky and air blasts and a mega tsunami. So the destruction would have been astonishing.
And we're talking about the Chesapeake Bay.
And the Chesapeake Bay impact structure. It's about 40 kilometers in diameter. So it's a sort of medium to large size impact structure, the 15th largest that we know on Earth today.
What does it look like today around there at the Chesapeake Bay?
It looks completely normal. The impact structure is actually buried under sediments. So it wasn't discovered until the 1990s. There is damage still under there today. It affects the aquifers and the water storage in that part of the eastern U.S. because, of course, it broke up all the rocks. So, yes, it still has an impact on, you know, on the water in the area today. It's apparently it's very high in chlorine. You might not want to drink it. But today, yes, you wouldn't notice it, which is why we have to drill down into the impact crater to be able to get samples or look offshore to see where some of the molten rock, which is what we call tektites, these little pieces of molten lava, molten rock that fall into the ocean. That's what we were looking for offshore via drilling.
You did this not because you wanted to conduct marine research, but in order to explore space. What was the exact aim of the research? Was there a specific research question?
Part of our project was just we wanted to use this relatively revised dating technique to date impact structures because they're actually very challenging to try and date. Most of the rock is vaporized when the meteorites hit, because we're talking enormous speeds and enormous amounts of energy. For example, Chesapeake Bay, 40 cubic kilometers of material would have been vaporized, just completely destroyed. So trying to find material that hasn't been altered over time is very challenging. And also because these impact structures form very, very quickly, we're talking fractions of a second to minutes to hours to days at the most. The amount of, you know, energy involved is huge, but it's for a very, very short time. So it doesn't really reset the ages in the rock very easily. And that's why they can be very, very hard to date. That's why I've been trying to date them for 30 years. But the whole project was to look at nearly 20 impact structures to see if we could use this new dating technique, if it would be useful. And the answer was sometimes yes, sometimes no.
You weren't part of the team who went there to drill, but you were the lead investigator of the research team. Could you maybe summarize who else was part of the team who worked on the research?
The person who originally found the impact structure in the 1990s was Wiley Poag from the United States Geological Survey. They took out the Droids Resolution ship in 1997 to drill to obtain the marine cores. They also drilled into the center of the impact structure to verify that it was an impact structure. But for my part in the project was really just bringing together about 28 people because obtaining samples from impact structures can be time-consuming and you have to know the right people. So we've got together 28 people to study these 20 impact structures all around the world. We dated impact structures in the US, in Canada, Norway, Chile, France, Germany, Ghana, and Finland.
In an article about your research, which was published on the GeoMar website, I read that you were using a technique called uranium-thorium-helium technique. Could you explain this technique?
Sure, yes. I mean, like any dating technique on rocks and minerals, it actually was developed in 1905 by Ernest Rutherford, a very famous chemist. But at the time, his results were not widely accepted because the ages were much younger than expected. So to be honest, the dating technique was forgotten about for about 80 years. And then took two researchers, Hans Lippolt at Heidelberg University and Peter Zeitler at Lehigh University in the US. They came along and they examined helium in these minerals and found that it actually moves very, very quickly. So this explains some of the younger ages. There also then Dr. Ken Farley at Caltech University in the late 1990s, early 2000s, discovered another reason for the very young ages and a way that we can correct to get precise uranium, thorium, helium ages. So it's really been in the last 10 years that this dating technique, which is a low-temperature dating technique, unlike some of the dating techniques that I use, which is sort of medium to high temperature. And so it has a lot of applications, for example, in finding how fast mountains are uplifted or eroded away. But it had never been used to date impact structures, so that's where my idea came from, to use this dating technique, which has been revived and is now quite popular all around the world to date impact structures.
Hmm. What did you actually find out about space by examining the sediments?
We didn't actually find out anything about space. We didn't find a piece of meteorite on the seafloor because, as I mentioned, when these asteroids impact the Earth, most of them are destroyed. Most of it is completely vaporized. You have a huge plasma ball that forms and temperatures up to maybe 10,000 degrees centigrade. And so the meteorite is pretty much instantly destroyed. But what we did find were grains that had been affected by these enormous amounts of shock and temperature. You can imagine it's like a very, 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 very large nuclear explosion. Chesapeake Bay would have needed 31,000 of the largest nuclear explosions ever detonated on Earth, which is 50 megatons, and we'd need 31,000 of those bombs to form the Chesapeake Bay. So, you know, a piece of the space rock is usually just not found. But what we did find were these mineral grains that had probably been very, very deep down, maybe 2 or 3 kilometers deep down, that had been sort of exploded out of the crater and then deposited 300 kilometers away into the sea. And these mineral grains show evidence of that shock metamorphism, these enormous pressures and these enormous temperatures that partially transform the crystals. And that's what we were looking for, you know, because we got other mineral grains that, because it's a sediment, you've got grains coming from everywhere, but we were specifically looking for these shocked grains. They have the appearance, they look like grains of rice, not clear or transparent, they're sort of a little bit cloudy, and this is what we were looking for, because that was evidence that they'd come from the Chesapeake Bay impact structure.
Can you think of other interesting craters formed because of asteroids or comets that you would like to examine in order to find out something about space?
Oh, there's so many. There's we know of 190 impact structures on Earth today. So, I mean, to be honest, one of our reasons for studying them is we want to be able to date the small impact structures because they're very, very hard to date. For example, the smallest impact structure that we have managed to date is called Monte Archi in Chile. It's only 350 meters across, so it's quite small. But we were able to successfully date it, which no other technique has been as accurately dated as we dated it. We dated it at 663,000 years old, So it's relatively young. And so, you know, we wanted to look at a variety of different size impact structures, from very, very big. The largest one we examined was 90 kilometers in size. It's called Manicouagan in Canada. But we also wanted to date the smaller ones, sort of like 5 or 6 kilometers, that no dating technique has successfully managed to obtain ages from. So we looked at one, for example, that's 6.5 kilometers wide in Wetumpka, it's called, in Alabama, in the U.S. We were able to get a really nice age of 84 million years for it. But other impact structures to look at? Oh, there's so many. A new one. I'd like to, if somebody finds a new impact structure that's never been dated before, I'd love to be able to date it.
Is there a crater formation, an impact structure that was just recently caused by a comet?
Oh, well, I mean, there have been, in terms of actual impact structures formed. The last one was in 1908, 30th of June 1908. It's called the Tunguska, and it hit in Siberia, in Russia. As far as we know, it didn't actually form a crater because it exploded in the atmosphere, but it was about maybe 190 meters in size, and it killed about 3 people. Knocked down about 80 million trees. That was the last recorded historical impact.
How come the asteroid or the comet that hit Chesapeake Bay didn't explode in the atmosphere?
It was so large. It was probably about 2 kilometers in size. So we're talking very, very big. And very, very big asteroids don't break up quite so easily as small ones. I mean, everybody remembers the Chelyabinsk impact that was in central Russia in 2013. Again, that was one that burst up in the atmosphere. It was about 20 meters in size, but I mean, it, you know, injured 1,500 people and damaged over 7,000 buildings. So, and that was relatively small, 20 meters. I mean, you know, it did do a considerable amount of damage. It burst in the atmosphere at about a height of 30 kilometers. The size of it was about 400 kilotons of TNT. Impacts are fairly common. The last one that, again, was sizable was last year on the 18th of December. It was about 10 meters in size, and it hit in the Bering Sea. It was about 170 kilotons of TNT, about 10 times the size of the Hiroshima bomb in 1945. So luckily there was nobody around.
Your findings have been published in an international journal called Meteoritics and Planetary Science. Will this research still continue, or are you working on any projects that connect space and sea?
That's a good question. We are still writing up some of our research on some of the earlier projects that we've undertaken, because it takes time, you know. We've done a lot of work on this. But I do not have any plans in the foreseeable future that I know of to date any more of these impact structures. I've moved now to Tugema in Kiel, and a lot of our work there is to look at ocean floor and submarine volcanism. A lot of my projects now are dealing with that, and they're keeping me extremely busy.